Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a food science writer, a TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Now, I love a picnic. I mean, they bring people together, they connect us with nature, they make meals more exciting, more adventurous. I once had a picnic in Kabul, looking over the Hindu Kush, at which we flew these vicious competition kites with their strings covered in glass shards, and we grilled lamb's testicles over charcoal. Spammy, since you ask, but in a good way. But definitely an adventure. But the evolution of the picnic is fascinating, and there's a rich history behind them. From 18th century banquets to modern day gatherings in the park, the picnic has evolved over time, reflecting fascinating changes in social norms and everyday life. Finger foods and picnic blankets weren't always typical, for example. And hold the front page, they weren't even originally held outside. So where did it all begin? When did foods like Scotch eggs become synonymous with a picnic? And how did we arrive at the picnic as the aspirational symbol of summertime that we know and love today? Well, with me to explore this is the fantastic Dr. Alex Lee. He's a fellow at the Centre for the Study of the Renaissance at Warwick University. Hello, Alex, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks very much for having me on.
Well, it's a great, great pleasure. So what do we, I mean, first of all, the word picnic, we sort of all accept it as something that means, you know, a meal outside, but it's a really strange word, isn't it? What do we know about the origins of the picnic and where and when did it all start?
Well, that's a great question. And the simple answer is we don't know a lot. The origins of the picnic are really shrouded in mystery. Even the word itself is a bit uncertain in terms of its origins. We think it may have come from two French words, the verb piquer, to pick or to peck, and the noun nique, a small amount. So it might mean, you know, to have a little nibble on something. But we don't find it written down until the mid-17th century. In about 1649, a satire appears, taking the mickey out of a group of people called the Fronde, who were opposed to the French monarchy. And in this kind of comedy, there's a character called Pique-Nique, who is a big, burly, fat guy who's on the barricades and is supposed to be a hero of the downtrodden masses. But the joke is that he's actually a bit of a glutton and is always stuffing his face. So the comedic effect is that picnic means, in this sense, a huge meal that's lavish, excessive, and enjoyed at other people's expense. But about 50 years later, we find it used again in a less pejorative way to refer to a sort of a dinner that's pretty nice, to which all the attendees contribute something.
Oh, like a sort of potluck meal.
It is exactly like a potluck meal. But as you said in the introduction, what's really unusual about it is that there's no association to start with the outdoors. In fact, by the time we reach the Enlightenment, it's very, very clear from our written evidence that it's happening inside. It's happening either in people's houses or, more rarely, in like a hired room or something like that. And in fact, the food isn't even the main attraction. It's meant to be something that's an event where you show off how refined and witty and clever you are. There might be some clever jokes. There might even be some dancing. We find some of the great intellectuals. Well, exactly. I mean, they were a real event. And we find some of the cleverest and most dazzling wits of the period writing about, in a very self-conscious way, about how they dined en pique-nique with their friends. Rousseau talks about this, and a number of other people do as well. It's a sign of refinement, but it's indoors.
And the word pique, I mean, you know, there is also a slight sense of a quarrel, isn't there? I mean, is it stretching a little bit far to say, you know, people are there with their sort of quarrelsome wit, or is that clutching at straws?
Well, it's an interesting question, actually. And there's always a little bit of cruelty that lurks behind the surface of wit. And it's true that in, you know, 17th, early 18th century France, wit was often at somebody else's expense. So that's there, undoubtedly. But it's not yet the centrepiece of the whole enterprise.
And so it started off inside. It was an event itself. And any other sort of details that were common between picnics? The type of food or was it just more of the sense of it being an event?
There are no particular foods that were especially associated with picnics at the moment. As you say, it's really an event to which people contribute a share and enjoy together. The food is, you know, a nice extra. What matters is being together, having a joke, maybe dancing a bit as well, and that's it.
Now, you're talking to us from just outside Lyon. Are the Lyonnais big picnickers? Picnickers?
Well, it's certainly a big food capital. Everyone enjoys their food, and a lot of Lyonnais, classics of Lyonnais cuisine are great for picnics. Like we have saucisson brioché, which is like a big fat sausage in brioche, which is perfect. There's also a local version of what are those things? There's pies that we have in England that are like meat that's ground up.
Petit pâté de pesnes.
Yes, whatever the English version is, yeah, we have those as well. I've completely lost track of words.
Pork pies.
Pork pies.
We've been in France for too long.
I've gone native. But we have those. So yeah, people love picnics. My family, we often have picnics as well. So it's something that we do enjoy very much. But it is important to stress that although picnics begin in France and are still enjoyed in France, they only start to resemble what we know as a picnic today when they leave France.
Okay. But let's go back to begin with. Who would have attended these picnics? I mean, was it everyone? Was it the wealthy? Did peasants also? Obviously, the written record about peasants is pretty thin. Would they have gone out and picnicked?
Well, when we're talking about a picnic, that's to say something which is designated with the word, we're really talking about an event which is enjoyed by the elite, if you like, those who are rich, those who are generally aristocratic, well-to-do. A picnic is not, in the 17th, early 18th century, something that's enjoyed by the hoi polloi.
And you said that it becomes interesting when it leaves France. What happens next? What's the nature of the picnic after the French have begun the process?
Well, the big event is the French Revolution. As soon as the French Revolution happens, all the bigwigs, all the aristos, all the wealthy members of French society run. They run for their lives, they flee abroad, and they go lots of places around Europe, but especially to London. And when they go to London, and more generally to Britain, they take picnicking with them. When it arrives in Britain, two really important transformations take place. The first one is that picnics in a certain segment of society stop being refined and start being a bit more rowdy.
Oh, excellent.
Well, exactly. Read into that what you will. But in around 1801, a group of young libertines establish something they call the Picnic Society. And they meet together in rooms off Tottenham Street, if memory serves. And everyone brings some food and every person has to bring 6 bottles of wine. So they're not going to be thirsty.
That's ambition for you. I love it.
Well, be prepared. They're obviously all Boy Scouts. they didn't want to run short. But it's not really about the food. They do try to outdo each other in terms of luxury and extravagance, fine foods, wonderful wines, etc. But the important thing is the entertainment. And what's particularly interesting is the Picnic Society very quickly become known for their amateur dramatics. Every time they get together, they put on a little play. And they're not professional actors, so it's a bit rough and ready. But it's the amateurism and one imagines the wine that have been consumed as well, that contribute to making these really, really popular. So that pretty quickly, some of the nearby theatres start losing business to this mad group of picnic guys who are getting drunk and dressing up in strange things and doing daft stuff on stage. And a big dispute blows up. It's ridiculed by cartoonists and things like that. So that's the first big change. The first big change is it becomes raucous.
Yeah.
I should stress that raucous amongst the upper classes.
Yeah.
The second big change is more fundamental, really, as far as we're concerned today. And that's that the picnic starts to be enjoyed by people who aren't rich and titled.
That's shocking. Shocking.
I know. Revolutionary, isn't it?
But there goes the neighbourhood.
Exactly. The emergent middle classes start to enjoy picnicking and, shock of shocks, they start to eat outside. Now, okay. We don't know why they do this. It's one of the great mysteries of the picnic. Why they decide to call eating outside a picnic, no clue. It's quite possible that all they're doing is using a new word to describe an established practice. If people have been eating outside for various purposes for as long as, you know, as long as human history has been recorded.
Yeah.
But it's that they use the term picnic for the first time around. Now, we don't know why. Maybe it's just because they don't really understand where it's come from. But they've heard it and they think it's kind of cool. So they say, you know, this is a picnic. And they also stop. The middle classes don't really put so much emphasis on, you know, entertainment, on dancing and singing. It's more about, you know, sitting down on a rug or whatever, outdoors and sharing a simple meal. So we have the first picnics that we might recognise about then.
So that's extraordinary. So it has its roots, certainly in the UK, in sort of naughtiness and rebellion. And in a sense, the picnic is... You are subverting the idea of the classical meal, which is eaten around a table, and taking it outside and inviting the elements in. It's an adventure, I guess. And I think we still have that sense today that if you're heading out on a picnic, you are opening the doors to your life. You're doing something, you know, you're making an effort to eat in a slightly uncomfortable way in order to enjoy something else. So do you think that the naughtiness of the libertines, you know, just going a bit wild with the food is still there later on?
Well, that is a really good question. In the early 19th century, as we've seen, you actually have two ideas of picnicking side by side. One is the raucous craziness of the picnic society with the wealthy members of society. And on the other hand, you've got the genteel type of picnic among the middle classes. Now, as you go on, this idea of eating outside does come to predominate, but its associations are very varied. Whereas in Britain, it's quite genteel. In America, in the early to mid 19th century, it starts to become associated with like a flight from civilization, a return to primitivism, okay, simplicity, yeah, innocence, etc. And we have that's bound up with ideas of, you know, back to the wild, back to nature, popularized by people like Thoreau. But it's in France, these troublesome French, that things get complicated. After the monarchy comes back in France, all the exiled aristos start to go back a bit, taking picnics back with them. Mm-hmm. And they do resume their old habits. But eating outside, as in picnicking outside, also starts to gain a toehold. And other people start to enjoy picnics in France as well. However, what is quite interesting is that far from being associated with gentility or a return to innocence, it's associated more and more with naughtiness, with immorality. And
oh, is it
a
now?
Good, oh, well, yes, I saw your attention pick up at that. Well, I mean, a good illustration of this is a painting. You may well know Manet's Déjeuner sur l'herbe, a very well-known picture. You have two well-dressed gentlemen in suits sitting down, surrounded by naked girls.
I always picnic like that myself. I'm sure you're the same.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't, really? But that's an illustration of the associations of picnics, eating outside in the mid-19th century in France. This idea that if you're eating outside away from a normal civilized setting, you must be up to no good. Otherwise, why would you do this? Why wouldn't you eat at home or in a restaurant or in a hired room, for example? So It's a very mixed picture by the 19th century. There's no clarity yet about what a picnic connotes.
In fact, it sort of goes a little bit wild, I guess, doesn't it? It's sort of started off as being something a little bit naughty. It's got very naughty by now. Do you think there is a social significance? I mean, can we track sort of the mores and the morals of society through the picnic? Because it's an odd idea, isn't it? You're taking home comforts outside, but there are a lot of accoutrements to it as well. There's the wicker basket, there's the rug. You're kind of taking home comforts and laying them out inside and then living within that. And I'm just interested in what significance it has, or is it just a quirk of the fact that food needs to be an event?
Well, that's a really interesting point, actually, the idea that in some senses there is something slightly artificial about eating outside. Once you have society reaching a state where we eat in rooms that are set aside for the purpose at specified times of the day in specified company, taking food out of that context, except in a work environment, is slightly unnatural and slightly weird. And it is equally true that how we view that and what we take to that kind of event, what we use it to do, is a barometer of wider social mores. Up to that point, when we've discussed it already quite clearly, but from the mid-19th century onwards, it's equally true. Every change in the picnic is heavily influenced by bigger changes in society. The wicker basket is, a good way of starting to think about this. If you have a wicker basket, that raises the question of who's carrying it. You know, are you going to be able to go very far? Is a picnic something that you enjoy just nearby, a few hundred metres away, a few kilometres away? It limits what you can carry. But, you know, if you want to go further afield, does that mean you take another form of conveyance? Do you take a horse and cart? If so, That determines what sort of class a person can attend. Do you want to go further afield? When the train comes in, that starts to affect, what we can do, what we can carry, how we can carry it. As well, even family structures are bound up in this. If the picnic is a family event, you know, that tells us something about who's living under the same roof, the activities they do together, the meaning that's attached to sharing a meal. So you're absolutely right that social mores are reflected in how picnics are enjoyed, where they're enjoyed, and what's involved.
And when we get to the 20th century, are there any significant changes? Has it sort of pretty much evolved into what we know today? And is there still a sort of social aspect to it, a sort of social division aspect to it?
It's an interesting point. I mean, by the 20th century, don't forget that we have seen an explosion in forms of transport. I alluded to this a moment ago in talking about trains. We've got trains, we've got bicycles, we've got motor cars coming in for the first time. You know, boats can be hired more regularly in various contexts. So picnicking can spread more broadly. It can be enjoyed in lots of different contexts, lots of different settings. I mean, think about The Wind in the Willows, published at the very beginning of the 20th century. You have Ratty and Mole enjoy messing about in boats, but they also take a picnic with them. But it is true that by this point, we have a kind of stabilisation of the idea of the picnic as something that is enjoyed outside, something that involves sometimes like a red and white checkered rug, etc., etc. And it is probably the case, although I don't know of any research into this, that the information explosion, the information revolution of the kind of 19th century, the development of mass market books, mass market newspapers, etc., helped disseminate this idea and solidify the notion or the accoutrements linked with picnicking. It's also possible that we see, although there are always regional variations, say in England, in the types of food that are taken, there's a kind of stabilisation to it. Cooked preserved meats become a very regular feature of it, principally because they're things that can be transported to the site of the picnic without decaying, without requiring any particular sort of preservation in transit. And their importance also is no doubt closely related to the fact that picnicking can take place further away from home as well. But it is important to stress that picnicking, like most foodstuffs, like most types of meals, is never stable. And because, it is so closely related to and so heavily influenced by social mores. It never stays fixed.
Yeah. So let's take it apart a little bit and look at the sort of the modern picnic and the things that we tend to find in it. So what about the Scotch egg? I mean, is the Scotch egg Scotch, do you know?
I this is a topic I really haven't researched, but it is in many senses typical of what we were talking about a minute ago, something that is tasty, but is preserved and doesn't need any particular conditions to be maintained in order for it to be enjoyed several hours away from home. It's something that can be produced in a home environment or purchased locally and transported to the site of the meal without any loss of flavour or quality or risk or health risk. So it's indicative of the broadening scope of the picnic and also obviously influenced by the culinary tastes of the late 19th, early 20th century. It's part of parcel with cold tongue, cold ham, pressed meats and things like that. Yeah. I mean, I find my mind going back time and time again. I have two small children, so this is the reason, time and time again, to The Wind in the Willows and that great inventory that Ratty gives. I mean, I can't remember all the things in it, but it's mostly pressed meats. They are reflections of a particular type of taste that we don't always enjoy to the same extent. Some of these have stayed with us. You know, Scotch eggs, we still enjoy today. Pork pies, now I remember the word, the name, so that we continue to enjoy. But again, their persistence is a reflection, okay, not only of the fact that some tastes have persisted into the present day, but also that it's the convenience and the fact that they are dishes that can be made originally in homes or in local butcheries or local ways, but can also be made industrially as well, that ensures that they can persist into the present day. Whereas pressed meats we enjoy less in picnics, partly because of different tastes. I mean, they are associated, you know, pressed ham, pressed tongue, things like that. I think those have sort of passed out of our picnicking vocabulary, as it were.
More's the pity.
I mean, they are delightful, but in the years since the Second World War, for example, dishes like that tended to be associated with want. They tended to be associated with, you know, shortage, and lost some of their sheen, so kind of dropped out. Also, although they can be produced industrially, I think there is less kind of appetite for them, and so there's less enthusiasm from large producers. So to take a step back again, yeah. Some of these dishes are still with us, but there are changes too.
Yeah. So let's bring it to the modern day. Now, I would say that there is a modern version of the picnic which has an element of egalitarian activism, that, you know, we're beginning to see local councils having to sell off parks or trying to make more of their parks, and yet that's the place where, you know, urban people can go and have a picnic. Then there's a lot of a sense of freedom to roam, which feels like it's under threat at the moment. You know, there's been mass trespassing, ramblers' rights are fiercely guarded. Do you think that the picnic has become a feature of a sort of rebelliousness again, that the sense that people can take this thing outside and it's our right and it's one of our symbols to be able to claim this land, common land, as our own?
I think that's a very interesting point, actually. And I think there's something in there. The ability to go and picnic is an expression in modern life, I think, of a fundamental liberty that we all share, that we are not being confined to homes of one complexion or another, but can enjoy public spaces with friends and family at liberty. I do think it is an important barometer of attitudes towards things like freedom. But as you point out, there is a close analogy with things, the questions like the right to roam. How far does that interact with rights to private property? How far does that impinge on people's right to prevent people from tramping over their land and setting up their picnic hampers in the middle of a cornfield, for example? So in a sense, picnicking, while it does speak to this fundamental desire and need for liberty, also evokes a centuries-old question, a centuries-old struggle, if you like, between the rights of the individual and the rights of private property.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting, and maybe it will evolve as something more and more important. Now, we can hear from some picnickers now. So our producer, Lucy, has been to Ravenscourt Park in West London, where she met some people braving the wind to eat outside.
What's your favorite thing about a picnic?
It's very intentional, and I think that it brings people together.
They're low-pressure environments. They're informal. Everyone brings a little bit of something. It's like a potluck, you know? And it's just something communal to do outdoors. Back home in Thailand, it's sunny all the time, you know, but it means that you kind of take it for granted. Whereas here, when you see the sun peek out, it's like a whole event and you have to kind of celebrate. And a picnic's like a celebration of that. And it's also cheap, or it can be, unless you're having a bougie picnic.
What are your picnic essentials?
You've got to have a good blanket, definitely junk food, and a good sandwich.
Some sort of crisps and probably some sort of alcohol.
Of course, you need some nice sourdough bread, bit of cheese, some fruit, yeah. And maybe olives. Olives are always good.
Do you tend to bring store-bought or homemade food?
Mix of both. I would say the snacky things are normally store-bought and sandwiches made at home.
Made at home, I think if it's with my family, it tends to be made at home. But if it's with my friends, we'll probably just go to the shops.
It's a bit of both. I'll make a really good sandwich, but then, you know, I'll have some like tapas things on the side.
Okay, so those were the picnickers in Ravenscourt Park. And what's really interesting is that it breaks down into a few different things. So the concept of the picnic for them seems to be that it's low pressure. Potluck, as you said earlier on, it's about the communal nature of people sharing food. But also this idea of, you know, carpe diem, seize the sunshine. You know, it's here. it's a reaction to an event. Do you think this sort of fits in with the evolution of the picnic as you see it?
Oh, yeah. Well, when I was listening to that, I was thinking, goodness me, there's so much in this that we could unpack. The first point was that I noticed that one of the interviewees said, you know, back home in Thailand, we do this. And that's illustrative. You know, the fact that people have been eating outside, as you said earlier, for centuries. But now we use the word picnic to describe that all over the world. And with that comes certain associations, including this notion, particularly in rainy countries, not mentioning any names, that when the sun's out, we have to seize the day, we have to take advantage of it, and we are almost obliged to go and picnic. So, yeah, there's that element to it that I thought shone through beautifully in that interview.
Now, picnicking is big business for the food industry. You know, around summertime, they all start advertising their food to go and their packed up stuff. And it's easy to get sort of bite-sized sausage rolls, potato salad and things like that. Do you think that, and quite a few people there mentioned, you know, somebody said, junk, you got to have junk food. Do you think that convenience has had an impact on picnicking? It's no longer bringing something you've made, but you're still bringing something and adding to it. But does that water down the excitement or water down the importance of the picnic?
No, I think there's a really, really interesting point here that, in fact, I take this even further. I'd say that, yeah, commercialization has changed the picnic, as has globalization. You know, we're more likely today to find things like olives that one of the interviewers mentioned a moment ago, mash-produced sausage rolls, for example, in our picnics than we are to find cold tongue or ginger beer or something like that.
Yeah.
And that is an indicator of the extent to which our consumption habits have been shaped and changed by commercialization and by globalization. I mean, 70 years ago, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, the idea of consuming goods that would have been produced further afield than your local community would have been almost unthinkable, with the exception perhaps of wine. But yeah, it is what we were saying earlier about the idea of the picnic as a barometer of social mores and society more generally is perhaps no more evident than in our choice of foods. And you're absolutely right that here we can see commercialization and globalization on full display.
Yeah. So let's think about picnics around the world. Are there any particularly interesting variations that you know of? I mean, so in Afghanistan, there's always a little grill. And my God, the Afghans can grill piece of lamb like nobody else on the planet. Anything else that really sticks out to you?
Well, I have to confess, I wanted to ask you about your picnic in Kabul, because I was just so fascinated by that. But what you just said is fascinating. The idea of grilling something for a picnic is not something that we would necessarily think of if we were, you know, happily having a picnic in Salisbury or in Lille or somewhere like that. And this, I think, reflects a trend that we've alluded to already. That's to say that Every society has its own way of eating outdoors, its own habits that's influenced and shaped by the society and culture of that region. But we now call all of those things picnics, simply because the word has diffused over the last four centuries or so from France outwards. And we shouldn't expect picnics in Afghanistan to look like picnics in Brazil or picnics in the US. We should expect them to be different, wild, crazy, raucous and genteel at the same time without losing anything of their picnicness, if you like.
Yeah. So when my kids were younger, when it was cold, but we wanted to do something a bit naughty, we would have a picnic, but inside. And you literally just push the sofas back, lay down a rug and have that experience inside. And it still felt naughty and it still felt that there's a sense of freedom there that you wouldn't get from sitting at the table. So my last question for you then is, if you could have a picnic in any country, but also in any time, any era as well, which may be more interesting for a historian, which would you choose and why would it be? And it could just be because it's an adventure or it just sounds wild. I mean, the libertine ones and the you know, when they first started in London sound brilliant, I have to say. But what would be your choice?
Yeah, well, actually, I have two answers for this. The first answer is as an historian. And yeah, I would really, really have liked to have been at a picnic society dinner, predominantly because I want to see how bad the plays were. anybody could remember their lines after those six bottles of wine each. But if I, you know, answer is, you know, a person, honestly, my favourite picnics are picnics in the garden with my kids. I think that's something that what is nice about a picnic is, as we were saying, about getting away from it all, even if it's just outside the door. Even if we're not going very far, it's a chance where you are together. You're shaking off the confines of everyday life. You're shaking off your worries, all things that have been bothering you. And you're stepping into a different culinary universe. Even if you haven't made anything, even if the sandwiches look atrocious, no matter what you bring, it's something you share. And it's a way of being together and enjoying the sunshine. It's always relaxing. You know, wasps notwithstanding, that would be my preference. I know that's a bit soppy. Sorry for injecting a soppy note into it.
Soppy is wonderful. We love a bit of soppy. I think you're absolutely right. And there's a sense that the sense of freedom that you get from it is extraordinary. We can just hope that the terrible weather in Britain changes to some sunshine pretty damn soon so we can all start picking it outside. So, Dr. Alex Lee, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Food Matters Live podcast. Now, we'd like you to join us in our new initiative, Sustainable Food Week, where we're celebrating the influential people changing the future of food. There are a number of ways to get involved. We've got a digital digest, an in-person forum, and podcast opportunities. It's happening between the 18th and 24th of September. But if you want to be involved, you need to act now. Find out more on the Food Matters Live website or email us at info@foodmatterslive.com. And thank you so much for listening.